legitimate than Judaism was. I hear from time to time, over time. But he was regarded as one of the leading New Testament scholars.
Where does W.D. Davies live? I would like to talk to him.
Duke University.
Oh, really?
North Carolina.
Okay.
Yeah, we look at it. He had greater affection for Stephen Bishop. And in fact, he just completed a book on Cambridge history with Finkelstein.
Really?
On Judaism.
Huh.
I have wonderful letters from him recently that it had to do with his feeling of appreciation, how I helped sustain him when people were being very indifferent.
It's wonderful. I'd love to talk to him. So this ad is very important. Do you don't remember the approximate date, or if you could dig it up for me, because that would really be wonderful.
It's probably in the files.
Okay.
67, 68.
Okay.
But W.D. Davies became very agitated over the attacks on the Christian world, especially Van Jews' attack.
Yeah.
And he went around talking to some of his friends.
I see.
About signing him, joining him in signing it.
I see.
He was among the first to sign it.
I didn't realize that.
And he felt very honored to sign it.
Yes.
He was doing something real for the Jews.
That's for sure. He is.
And he will have... Now, he spent some time with Heschel.
Yeah.
And they liked each other. I wouldn't want this repeated, but it's a matter of how one treats Davies. Heschel felt that Davies was sort of going over the line on some of his interpretations of Paul and Rabbinic Judaism. He wrote a very good book on that.
Hmm.
And also felt that he did not understand core issues in Judaism. But they had a very affectionate relationship.
Yeah,
respectful.
I haven't really looked at that yet.
So
what happened to the ad?
It was published.
Yes.
It was a very powerful ad, signed by some of the most prominent names in the Christian world.
Yes. So who were the people trying to get the Christians to sign it? You?
I did.
Davies?
And W.D. Davies. I don't remember why I talked to Wolfe about it. I think he may have done some things with some Union theological view, although W.D. Davies had made this a cause. I remember he was calling me every day. He was going around to...
Because the story is that Heschel asked some of his people and clergy and laymen concerned, and they turned him down, and he was crushed.
Yeah, well, I talked to...
Was it at that period, at 67, or was it later?
It was around 67.
Yeah, 68.
It might have happened more later. There were other efforts like that. There were always efforts at ads, Christian ads, join ads.
Yes.
So there were a number of occasions where Heschel could have sought that out. My concern about Christians, I first joined it at the beginning. And when I saw the lineup, essentially radical left, Christian Marxists, Christian socialists, who wanted liberation for everybody in the world, but not for Israel.
Yeah.
I had a feeling that was a trap. Now, Heschel, out of principle, caused a sense of outrage about the Vietnam War, concern for peace, disarmament, stayed with it. And I would say to him, I think they're exploiting you.
Yeah.
Because the Berrigans, especially Daniel Berrigan, always used to refer to Heschel, my father Abraham, to support their movement. But then he would go off and write an article and would say that the Christians are the new Jews. We're the real Jews. We really preserve the prophetic essence. And Heschel was always indulgent, and I felt...
Heschel knew this.
Yeah, but he felt that the movement was more important than the idiosyncrasies. And I felt that there were other ways of making a point, and other institutions to make the point.
What other organization could he have allied himself with?
Oh, there were Carnegie movement on international peace. There were the meetings we were having with the National Council of Churches by that time with Catholic bishops on peace issues.
Yes.
And I used to invite him occasionally to some of those meetings. Those,
and he would attend.
He attended a few of them.
Yes.
Attended a few of them, and I mean, I thought there were certain situations where we had some measure of influence to direct what the message is and also the language, the rhetoric, the metaphors. And the clergy and laymen, they would listen to Heschel and they would all applaud. And then Berrigan and Wavestone Coffin, a few others, the people to the left of, would write the speeches.
Yeah.
And then ask you to sign it. If you didn't want to sign it, so they left your name out.
Yeah, yeah.
So I pulled out after my second meeting, Balfour Brickner stuck with it.
He's
been taking this left-wing line all along. But I felt it was not in the Jewish interest to be allied with people who were so anti-Israel.
So that was really the issue that many Jews criticized Heschel for. That
I don't know how many,
people,
but some did. Some did.
Yeah. Well, certainly the people at the seminary.
Yeah.
Wolf, you know, was against it. Seymour Siegel was against it very strongly.
Well, Seymour, you know, Seymour became a Reagan Republican before Reagan became a Republican.
Yeah.
I loved Seymour. I mean, I had enormous respect for him. I still use his work. But for some reason, he took this very right-wing turn and became ideologically obsessed.
I see.
With combating left-wing groups, especially Christian left-wing groups.
I see.
And anyway, actually worked for Reagan for a while.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he worked in the White House for a while.
How did Heschel respond to your criticism and you pulling out of the clergy and laymen?
Well, it was not a major issue. I just told him how I felt about it. See, there were certain kinds of issues that I determined for myself. Wolf is much more effective because first of all, he sees him every day. I made my position clear. And I wasn't going to hound him.
Yes.
And I knew how Wolf felt about it, and how Seymour felt about it. There were others. And I felt that others could work on him for that.
Yeah.
He was determined, and was determined not to give it up, mainly because of his outrage over the Vietnam War.
Yeah.
And some of us feel that he killed himself for the Berrigans.
Yes.
Because when they were let out of Harrisburg prison,
yeah.
It was a terribly stormy day. Heschel had influenza.
Yeah.
And he was warned not to go out in that weather. He was determined to go there to welcome them, receive them. And he became very ill after that.
Died the next day. What explains his tremendous carelessness in doing that? I mean, it wasn't to seek publicity. That explanation is completely irrelevant since no one was there to take photographs, I assume. It's a completely private act. And what was it about the Berrigans, or was it the symbolic significance of the event?
Well, I think this was Heschel's conscience. I mean, there are certain kinds of principles that he articulated in his most extreme form, and that he felt was really of ultimate importance. He felt the issues of war and peace were of ultimate importance, and that it was having a disastrous effect on America.
Yes.
American youth, older people, everything. I mean, they used to repeat that phrase about America stink.
Really?
That this feeling that so much was getting out of control was becoming so destructive and anti-human. And he felt the Vietnam War was doing that to a whole generation.
How did the Vietnam War affect the young people in the United States from
his
point of view?
Well, a good part of that is in his essay on children and youth.
Yes.
The basic feeling about what was happening to American society.
Yeah.
The militarization and...
I think lying, too.
Huh?
The lying of the government.
The deception of American people, and also, the construct of values that emerges out of that. Militarism is important. Business corruption is important.
Yeah.
But more personal, social, communal values, fears of compassion and caring, all that was being eroded.
Yes, yes.
I think he felt that this was the one group that gave him a platform actively to declare his opposition to the war.
Yes.
Because if he had gotten involved on a more bureaucratic institution, it might have been safer, but he wouldn't be able to move as freely.
Yes.
I mean, here, if they decided to call a press conference the next day, would run an ad in a week, they could do it.
Right.
They had no bureaucracies to account for. They had no big lay body to account for. It was a striking force.
It was also a religious movement, wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
A religious idiom. The protests took place in churches.
Yeah.
Vigils, fasts.
Well, yeah, but the question is what kind of religious thing? I mean, I think that was the issue.
What do you think?
I got involved in many religious movements. I was involved with a movement to get Cesar Chavez out of prison. And there was a lot of kind of left-wing things going on there. But the core issue was so clear.
Mm-hmm.
And the partners for that were mainstream Christians.
Yes.
Mainstream Catholics, mainstream Protestants, who were as impassioned about this as the left-wings were. That the left-wing people were not there. But we went out to Salinas Valley and we got Chavez out of prison.
Mm-hmm.
And we made a very powerful protest to the growers while they're exploiting the workers. And we had a prayer meeting with the workers. I mean, it was a very moving experience. There are ways of moving. I mean, I found that there are ways of putting together forces that were symbolically and practically powerful forces that had troops. I mean, if we had to do something on disarmament, and we got the National Council of Churches and 32 church bodies to send around messages, I mean, I put together several meetings with the White House on foreign aid and trade and on the peace issues, on consumerism. I mean, often within a matter of 3-4 weeks, we would send out night letters. We ended up with 35, 36 of the top religious leaders of America over there.
Yeah.
And boy, when Jimmy Carter walked in and saw these people with staffs and vestments and cardinals and archbishops, that was heavy stuff. And the others did not have the same effect. And I couldn't persuade Heschel of that.
Do you think Heschel was, politically blind?
I think he was more sometimes innocent.
Innocent.
Innocent, naive, and he had this kind of purist notion of principle.
Yeah.
That the issue was so great that the means for getting there is less important.
Yeah. So you're willing to compromise to be with some kind of people that he wouldn't agree with politically,
so
and
terrible.
It might be.
He said if they could help him get done what he wants to get done, he thought the issue was so overwhelming, so overpowering.
Right. Well, see, I think what you reminded me of was the fact that Heschel saw the Vietnam War as affecting the entire society in a fundamental way. I think he was right.
Oh, no question.
No question. So that this is what I think he really felt, that there was a moral collapse in America.
My approach has been that if you really want to bring about change, then you've got to get to the National Conference of Catholic Bishops.
Mm-hmm.
And what I thought was innocent about what Heschel was doing is Daniel Berrigan and Philip Berrigan were anathema.
I see.
To the Catholic bishops. So what he got, he had the advantage of a quick strike.
Yeah.
But the loss was that you lost the whole Catholic hierarchy.
I see.
You lost the possibility of reaching the largest majority of 50 million Catholics in America at that time. And I just felt that was nice.
That's very important. So what organization worked with the Catholic bishops, if any?
Well, when I was with the Synagogue Council of America, except those days the Catholics weren't doing any really ecumenical work before the Vatican Council. They just never took part in anything across faith lines. But after 65, it became a powerhouse.
Well, so they weren't reachable at the beginning, 60... when did Heschel start Vietnam War protests? Probably 65, 66, right? It was after the Vatican Council.
Yeah.
So he did have access to the Catholic hierarchy, or at least he would have realized that this was a very serious political choice. Because he would have known. He would have understood exactly what you were saying.
Yeah, well, he was terribly impatient about it. I mean, look, he was agitated. I used to feel guilty after talking to him about it. Because I felt he really took this more seriously than I had.
Now, he was emotionally agitated. Physically and emotionally agitated. Obsessed. Right?
Seized by the issue. Yeah.
Right. How do you explain that? Because I used to walk with him on Shabbos from 65, 66, and that's all he would talk about, most of what he would talk about.
I think
about.
He understood something we didn't understand, but it was often the case.
Which was what?
He understood that this was a major miscalculation of judgment on the part of the American government.
Yeah.
That it was leading to a war without victory. That it was destroying the lives of thousands of young Americans. It was eating up billions of dollars of resources that America needed to do other things for young people, for old people, for social concerns. I mean, I think he really understood it.
Yes.
And all the things we're saying now today, he was saying that.
He was, the war destroyed Johnson's Great Society.
Sure. Poverty, anti-poverty programs.
Exactly.
You know. And I think he understood that.
Yes.
I don't think I understood it at that time, the way he understood it.
Yeah.
I would listen to him and I almost had a feeling there was a kind of excess involved.
Right.
But he had a powerful intuition about the moral tragedy that this war represented, and I think he already had a sense of what it might do to society.
Interesting.
He was right.
Why do you think he was capable of this type of intuition? Because he was, intellectually a brilliant man.
Well, no, I think his moral conscience was quite advanced. I mean, he had antenna on ethical issues. A few other people had real antenna. But I also think his experience in Europe with governments.
Yes.
Governments that lied to their people, governments that manipulated, governments that destroyed their people, governments that created war for the sake of raison d'etat. There's a certain kind of realism or cynicism and distrust. And I think he really was very Jewish in that sense, prophetic in that sense that trust not in princes, or son of man, for in them there is no salvation.
Yeah.
I think he saw through the lies that the presidents and the secretaries of state were feeding. And he saw the horrors.
Yes.
And he saw the killing.
Yes.
I think the killings and destruction that, so, I mean, he understood it.
That's
and
right.
We understand it now. He understood it then.
Yeah.
I mean, that now, in retrospect, is something he deserved much more credit than he got. He was maligned. People felt that he was naive and completely innocent and was taken over.
Egotistical?
Well, yeah, those people who didn't understand him thought it was a publicity rap, that he would do anything to get attention. But look, Heschel was egotistical. But there are constructive uses for ego. First of all, I don't know if any Jewish leader is not egotistical. It's a question.
As opposed to the Goyim.
No. Even Christian. I mean, that's our human condition.
Yeah.
I mean, it is. It's it's personal gratification, and it's the distinction between. I've always seen myself the distinction between egoism and narcissism.
Mm-hmm.
Egoism is the desire to fulfill oneself and get gratifications. In one sense, of self-worth is confirmed by doing certain things, even grandiose things. Narcissism is a self-preoccupation.
Yes.
Where you want publicity for publicity's
sake.
Yes,
right.
And you need a daily fix.
Yeah.
I mean, I see people who if they don't get their name on the paper day after day after day, become shattered.
Yeah.
I'm not worth anything. You know, I don't... I mean, that's sick. That's pathological.
Yeah.
Heschel didn't have that kind of narcissism. I think he was egotistical. He had a right to be, because I think of the contribution he made. I think he also understood that unless you get publicity for certain things, you simply will be ignored.
That's right. That's right.
But there was a whole faculty at the seminary. Nobody knew who they were.
Yeah.
Therefore, their message never came across.
That's right.
They still don't know who they are.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, well, to see him in the 1941, 42, 43, trying to affect the Jewish organizations before he became famous, or let's say even known, and then how he took off, well, at least in the 50s as a theologian, and then in the 60s as an activist, it's the same person.
Yeah.
Same person. You know, trying to be active.
But if he had only written his books and did not become a public figure, he would not have the impact.
No, people wouldn't have.
We had a lot of scholars who wrote very great books.
Yeah.
Saul Lieberman wrote very great books.
Yeah.
Spiegel wrote some very good things. Alexander Marx wrote the classic history textbook.
Mm.
You walk around America and ask them who these people are.
Yeah.
And then you ask who Heschel was.
Well, you know, I think people need to see scholarship applied. They don't believe that it has any value unless it's applied. And with religious scholarship, maybe that's a correct demand.
No, I think for our young people it's absolutely critical.
Yeah.
They've got to know that being Jewish and studying Jewish things means something in the real world.
Transform your life.
It makes a difference.
Your life, yeah.
It makes a difference. Being Jewish makes a difference.
Yeah.
And that's why the American Jewish World Service thing has become so important with young kids.
Mm.
And working, you know, in the underdeveloped countries.
Yeah.
We've got 27 projects going in third world countries.
Really? Who administers that?
Larry Phillips helped organize it.
I
helped him organize it with another fellow who's since left. But we have a new director now. And we're working in Mozambique and the Philippines and India. The Dalai Lama developed a whole attitude about Jews because of the work we did
really?
In South India.
Interesting. So the business of the Berrigans, Heschel sacrificing himself, in some ways, you know, Heschel's rhetoric is an extremist rhetoric, just as he describes the prophet's rhetoric.
Yeah, called apocalyptic.
Apocalyptic,
prophetic. Prophetic and apocalyptic.
So this is both an element of his personality, of a very intense personality, and an intuition of the significance of the event. If we're talking about Vietnam affecting the entire American society, and America as the model, the moral model of the free world.
Right.
And the civil rights movement as being representative of racism in the 20th century that he experienced himself. And Israel in 1967, I think he really came to grips with the full significance of Israel at that moment.
And the
Holocaust, right.
Heschel understood the connections.
Yes.
No, that's why, you know, feeling of loss has been enormous. There's been no one around to succeed him in that way. No one. You know, you've got a lot of lieutenants around, all of the bits and pieces of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Themselves. But he was unique. He was very generous. Mainly because of his scholarship and his history.
Yes.
He represented three continents of Jewish civilization.
That's right.
So, and I used to identify with him. I mean, I used to see the pain he went through, the suffering, the humiliation he went through, because people didn't stand the attention he got.
Yes.
Well,
I just reread his biography of Maimonides, and it's almost a map of his own life. It's amazing to read it.
I don't know where they burnt his books, but. Burn Heschel's books. I'm not sure. I burned Maimonides' books in
France. Yeah.
But,
It's a very important book.
That's why I think what you're working on is extremely important.
I think it is.
Because it's a man, it's also a period of history.
Yes.
And I think, tragically in many ways, except for some conservative rabbis mainly, and Christians, probably more Christians that understood and appreciated Heschel.
Yes.
Than Jews.
Yeah, yeah.
Christian nuns were still reading his books for meditative reading.
Yeah.
Still writing PhD theses about him. Probably a whole Christian library now on Heschel.
Yes. Well, there's a new book out that came out last year. And